You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science. This is Collected Works, Volume 316. This is the second half of the book, The Easter Course, and this is Lecture 10, given in Dornach on the 22nd of April, 1924. My dear friends, I would like it if today you would really tell me what worries you so that we can hold our discussion with that in mind. Question from Helena von Grunelius. One question which is of great concern to all of us is how we should cope with all the meditations we have. At what time should we do them? Should we do them in a proper rhythm? How should we do them? Should we do all the ones we were given at Christmas at the same time? Until now, at least, it appears that most of us have felt crushed, as it were, by all the meditation material, and do not yet know how to live with it properly. End of question, Rudolf Steiner. Well, you see, with regard to all these things, it really is a matter of not giving strict instructions in such a way, because that would be intervening too much in human freedom. And if we look at these things in the right way, the soul should not be crushed by them. The meditations which were given here at Christmas were always given in such a way that the direction in which they moved the soul was also stated. That was stated with all the meditations such as these. That, of course, also included meditations such as are now given in the first class. All these meditations are different from someone coming and asking for a meditation which has a personal effect. If someone wants a meditation which has a personal effect, he or she must, of course, be told whether the meditation concerned should be done in the morning or evening, how such a meditation should be handled in other respects, and those kinds of things. These are meditations intended to act on the esoteric life of the person in accordance with his or her abilities and karma. By themselves, they then lead to the individual not remaining alone, but developing the impulse to recognize all those others who are striving in the same direction. We have to consider such meditations as personal meditations. Anything else that is given, unless it is stipulated that it would be good for such a meditation to be undertaken at a particular time or under particular circumstances with specific accompanying effects, which has not happened yet, all such meditations which are given like the meditation from the esoteric lesson at Christmas are given in such a way that we observe very precisely the effect achieved by the meditation. And then it is a matter of using the circumstances of one's life, that is, the specific situation of our life, to do such meditations. You see, such meditations are simply done when we find the time for them. The more frequently, the better. They will always have the corresponding effect. With such meditations, in particular, it should always be a matter of striving for personal development. Coming together should then be sought on the basis of what arises for the spirit. And it will be found so that really the most depressing thing would be if specific instructions were given as to the way that these meditations should be done individually, or, as you say, by a whole group at the same time. That would also lead to the meditation losing something, which it should really have. You see, it detracts from every meditation if we start from the obligation that we have to do it. We have to be very clear about that. It detracts from every meditation if we start from the obligation that it has to be done. That is why it is so necessary with a personal meditation that such a personal meditation is gradually transformed into something in human beings which they experience in their soul as a thirst for the meditation. And the people who are the most correct in doing the morning and evening meditations they have to do in the most correct way are the ones who have a thirst for the meditation in the same way that people eat when they are hungry. If the meditation becomes something without which we cannot exist, of which we feel, with regard to the soul, that it belongs to the whole life of soul, then the meditation is experienced in the right way. With the other meditations, it is a case of really inwardly wanting to become a physician, of telling ourselves, this is the path and I will use the meditation as frequently as I can. I am aware that when I do this one or that one, it has this or that purpose. The urge must therefore always be there from the free inner volition of the human being to undertake such a meditation. And it is actually unimaginable that this would make one despondent. Because why should the thing, for which one is inwardly thirsting, make one despondent? If that happens, it has already passed over into a kind of obligation, and that it should never be. It should never be an obligation. Particularly when we are talking about becoming a physician, we should consider the following in the most profound meaning of the words. Becoming a physician should never be seen in the way it is seen today, as entering a profession. But we should become a physician through an inner calling, the inner devotion to healing, and so on. And when we feel this general urge to heal, then this meditation will show us the way, and we will be guided to our goal. There are probably few professions, other than the medical profession, in which it is as damaging to see the work as an external obligation. Love of humanity and a real natural finding one's way into being a physician are integral parts of the medical profession. Now, if it is not of any great benefit for real healing in medicine today, in medical studies today, if people want to become a physician because they cannot think of anything better and it seemed the best option to them at the time, if that is not particularly desirable, it is even less desirable if someone wants to become a physician artificially through meditating if he or she does not feel this thirst of which I have spoken. Because the ancient means, the esoteric means to make progress, provide support if the intention is right. They support infinitely more than any outer decision, whereas they cause much more damage than the outer circumstances of life if they do not arise from the right soul mood. But now, you also have to understand in the right way what I refer to as soul mood here. Normally, people do not take what we call karma very seriously. We must, of course, have a certain vocation, let us say, preordained for us, in that karma puts us in a particular place. And we must be clear that following an obligation is damaging, but following karma is something that certainly lies in human development. Karma has put all of you in a place where you can work in medicine. Now you just have to look deeply enough inside yourself, and you will find that you really feel that thirst. And you will find the moments, the hours, in which you want to do such meditations. If you seriously take up such a serious profession, then something must not happen, which has happened frequently, particularly since the Christmas conference. It is not related directly to being a physician or to medicine, but greatly to general human characteristics, so far as they exist in the general anthroposophical movement. So it is also of importance for you. I will indeed mention it in another place, but because it applies to you with particular intensity, I will also say it here. It was said at the Christmas conference that a new spirit should enter the anthroposophical movement, that inward work should take place. Now some people drew a rather peculiar conclusion from that. There are people who occupy certain positions within the anthroposophical movement. They hold their offices. And now there are these people who hold their offices who write, yes, now a new spirit, I fully understand that, will enter the anthroposophical movement. I fully place myself at the service of this new spirit. I do not want to remain in my old office and want to make myself fully available. That will not lead anywhere. It will only lead somewhere if the people concerned know that they have to develop as human beings in the place in which they find themselves, also with regard to the powers they use. And that, of course, applies particularly to you, who have started out in the medical profession. You have to see it as karma, and be clear that you will do much work in the future, and secondly, that the thirst of which I have spoken to you, to approach the real readiness to be a physician by way of meditating, can always be found in the human mind. That is what I wanted to say about the use of meditation. It should work in such a way that the one illuminates and supports the other, that the one is illuminated by the other. It can quite easily happen that a meditation you did had a strong effect. Now you have to do another meditation in order to illuminate this effect to an even greater extent. You might do one meditation once or twice, another one 12 times. That is something that will emerge if you properly take to heart what has been given as a meditation, experience it inwardly, and also take to heart what was said with regard to the goal of the meditation. We have to use this opportunity to expand on certain things which were touched on at Christmas. End of Steiner's comment. Helena von Grunelius again. It was not that I thought that meditation should be done at certain times, but I nevertheless felt a certain despondency, because I took it as an obligation to do this meditation, and sometimes did not have the proper freshness to experience it as a need. Now this might be, at least in my case, because until now I simply did not have the attitude which one has to have as a physician, namely, the will to heal. I believe that some of us were in this position. We did not become physicians in order to heal, at least some of us, but because of the great interest we had to study the human being, in sickness and in health, and really to approach medicine wholly from the cognitive side. The will to heal was something quite new to me at Christmas, and so because of present work I was initially very unhappy, because I had a lot to do and was too tired at the beginning to do meditations. Now, through this work, I began to have more contact with patients, so that now I have an idea of the will to heal. And so I think that now I will be better able to do the meditations, because then this will arise from a real desire, and the meditation will then really be seen as a path to achieve the goal. Precisely such devotion to human destiny, such empathy which we feel with everything as a physician, and the will to heal, that is something which caused many of us difficulties until recently, because we were not made aware of it through our studies, which tend to approach medicine from the cognitive side. And that's the end of her comment, Steiner again. You have to consider the following. If you separate these two things in the medical field, the cognitive side and the will to heal, you are basically, in reality, expressing a contradiction. It is important to be clear about what is the case here. You see, we have to talk about the necessity of knowing the human being in a great variety of fields. In education, for example, we have to talk very much about starting from a knowledge of the human being. The same thing happens with us. We also have to talk about a knowledge of the human being in other fields when we look at the reality. A knowledge of the human being is necessary for everyone who wants to get beyond an unskilled approach. Everyone needs to have an understanding of the human being. That such knowledge of the human being is not being sought in the various fields is a consequence of the error which has become widespread in modern culture. You see, knowledge of the human being is indeed being sought today, in a certain sense, even if it never happens, because it can really only be found through anthroposophy. It is being sought by theologians, I mean the outside theologians. The outside educators are also looking for it. Such knowledge of the human being is being sought by a wide variety of people. The only people who are not looking for it are the lawyers, because jurisprudence is not something today of which we can say that it connects with the world in reality. Now, you see, the key thing is that a knowledge of the human being must be specialized somewhat in the various fields of life. The physician requires a somewhat different knowledge of the human being from the educator. Only somewhat different. It would be necessary for education to be pervaded as much as possible by medicine, and medicine in turn to be pervaded as much as possible by education. Those threads should indeed be tied. The interchange between the one and the other activity based on a knowledge of the human being. If we now look at a knowledge of the human being in concrete terms, we have to ask ourselves the following. You see, when you say, quote, recognizing a person's pathological state, close quote, that is a preconception which arises from materialism. It is a materialist preconception. What does recognizing the pathological state of a person mean in concrete terms? How do I recognize the disease which is localized, say, in the liver, the spleen, the lung, the heart? How do I recognize it? When I know the healing process which might underlie the disease in order to overcome it. Let me read that again. How do I recognize it? When I know the healing process which might underlie the disease in order to overcome it. In reality, the pathological process is the question. And we stop at the question if we only seek to recognize the pathological process. The answer is the healing process. We know nothing about a pathological process if we do not know how to heal it. Such knowledge consists in the understanding as to how the pathological process can be rectified so that there can be no medical studies without the will to heal. Recognizing pathological states means nothing. If we try to understand the human being by practicing pathology without immediately moving on to therapy, that would be equivalent to describing a diseased organ. But such a description is of no value. It does not have the least value. Because with regard to the mere description, with regard to abstract knowledge, with regard to what is now considered to be a knowledge of nature, it is quite irrelevant whether we are dealing with a healthy or diseased liver. It is not possible to distinguish scientifically between a healthy and a diseased liver, or we can do so at most through the circumstance that a healthy liver occurs more frequently than a diseased one. But that is an external circumstance. If we want to recognize a diseased liver, we have to think about what can heal the diseased liver. And then, you see, it is about the following. What forms the basis of healing? That I know the substances and forces I have to apply to the human being, so that the disease process is transformed into a healthy process. Such knowledge is provided when I know, let us say, for example, that equisetum assumes the activity of the kidney in the human being, the human organism. So if the activity of the kidney is insufficiently undertaken by the astral body, I have equisetum do it. I support the astral body with equisetum arvensa. But that only provides an answer to the actual situation which exists. The same process which outwardly produces equisetum also occurs in the human kidney. And I have to look at the equisetum process in connection with the human kidney. But then I have already moved over to healing. So it can never be a matter of practicing pathology in a merely abstract sense, because in reality that is nothing. The diseased state should really only be looked at by a person in the context of knowing that a healing medicine works in this or that way. The feeling we have toward knowledge should push us in all fields of life toward reality, not toward formal understanding. That is how it was when all knowledge was mystery knowledge. Knowledge had to be withheld from those who simply wanted to know, and it was only given to those who had the will to turn such knowledge into reality. Does that answer your question? Helena von Grunelius again. Perhaps I was a bit extreme when I only spoke about health and illness. I actually still include the way in which people should be healed in the cognitive aspect. I am referring to something else. That even when we know how a person can be healed, we may not have the will to heal him or her. Until now, I did not have the impulse to understand and experience the human being, how to heal, only in order to heal a person. I did not have this impulse. The impulse to make all of my work, my studies, and everything I assimilate as knowledge inwardly infused with this. I have to be able to heal a person. Steiner, that is hypertrophy of insight. Helena von Grunelius again. But that is how it is with me, and it is a fact which I wanted to put, because it exists and it might appear very peculiar. Steiner again. You see, it is a good thing. You will think this terribly trivial and simple. It is a good thing that clocks cannot do that, because otherwise there would be clocks which are properly wound up in accordance with all the skills of the clockmaker's art, but which would not want to work. Human beings can develop this or that by letting their will hypertrophy in one direction or another. But that is then something which does not lie in the healthy development of human nature. Knowledge about healing should not actually exist without the will to heal. And you should really be speaking about something completely different today. You should not be speaking about that, but you should be saying, quote, I have only been studying medicine for a short time. Now I am filled with an irrepressible will to heal. I have to restrain myself to prevent this will, which comes from knowledge, from bursting out so that I want to start to heal all the healthy people. Close quote. I do not say that as a joke. It should really be the voice of restraint which is heard. It should not be possible at all to say, quote, I have striven for knowledge of healing, but not for the will to heal. Close quote. Because knowledge which is real cannot be separated from the will. That is quite impossible. Another participant's question. I think that what Miss von Grunelius has said is something, a state, which tends actually to be brought out by the courses as they are taught at university. It seems to me that this is a result which we find as the end result after 10 or 12 semesters of study. The whole mindset of medical science is directed at the cognitive side, without leading over into the therapeutic aspect. We learn things in the lecture theaters, in the clinical semesters, and throughout the lecture all we hear about is diagnosis. And right at the end, when the hospital bed has already been wheeled out, and the professor does not know how to fill the time until the next patient arrives, a few words are dropped in about therapy, which are totally useless. A lecturer also said that once it was on a gynecology course, and the senior physician spoke about the work of the physician in practice. Quote, have you not noticed, gentlemen, that basically so little has been said about therapy? You will only notice that once you are engaged in practice. That is what happened to me. I had a head full of facts, and that is when I noticed that I had never heard any reference to that. Close quote. He also described how there are only 5 minutes of talk about therapy and 40 minutes about diagnosis. And no physician had noticed that they had heard nothing about therapy throughout their studies. That also leads me to a question. As a young person who, as a physician, sought something different in academic medicine, conflicts arise in me as a result of this basic approach of science today. This utterly superficial attitude, which comes to expression in all kinds of ways, means that things often arise in diagnosis which are abhorrent to the soul and appear outrageous. So I would like to explain that with an example. A patient once came to me with the question whether I could help her. She suffered from a recurring inflammation of the frontal sinuses, and she had frequently visited a specialist. A perforation was made from the nose and so on, and she said she could no longer bear it. She felt too physically interpreted, and she could no longer go along with that. Could I not help her in another way? This attitude, which the patient experienced in such a sensitive way, is one which we encounter everywhere, which does no more than fumble and search about superficially, leading to nothing, an attitude which might be described as cynical. The result can also only ever remain superficial and will not lead to what is actually happening. So I have often asked myself, is it actually good or necessary at all to respond to such an extent to these methods in the form they are given, in the form they have to be gone through in our studies, and which becomes monstrous in the gynecological methods of examination, which stand in no relationship to what is actually achieved at the end? Is it necessary to go through all these methods? I have the feeling that what is present as the healing instinct in a person is completely suppressed by having to go through all of that. Let me tell what an old colleague said to me. He was not speaking about a physician, but a rural healer in the Bavarian mountains. He did all kinds of orthopedic things which consummate ease so that he became famous. He did all kinds of orthopedic things with consummate ease so that he became famous. An orthopedist in Munich heard about his skill, went to see him, and told him he should come to his hospital. The man saw all the equipment in the hospital, and the professor said to him that he should show him how he did it. The rural healer looked at everything, and from that day onward he could no longer heal. Should we go along with what academic medicine presents to us in the way of methods, scientific methods? Or should we, as far as possible, not go along with that? End of question, Steiner again. Looked at from this side, the question is exceptionally important. You are, of course, right, and I did not want to speak about the personal circumstances of Miss von Grunelius, but I just wanted to characterize something which exists as an attitude of necessity as a result of studies today. In proper medical studies, it would not occur to anyone to want to know about a person's pathological process or about healing processes without the will to heal. That would not be absent from proper medical studies. It is only absent because of the way that medical studies are set up today. On the one hand, we have to say that actually most of what medical students have to study in their semesters has nothing whatever to do with healing, and therefore basically only represents a burden on the human soul with impossible things. You see, medical studies today are rather like asking a sculptor, let us say, first to get to know mainly the scientific characteristics of marble and wood. That is not something he really needs to concern himself with. Much of what is written in textbooks today, or what happens in hospitals, has nothing to do with medicine. In the instant when you move from a physical description, which the lady experienced when she felt too physically interpreted, to the etheric body, most of the things written in the medical books lose their meaning, because in that instant, when you move over to the etheric body, you obtain a quite different perspective of the organs. In the instant when you move from the physical body to the etheric body, intellectual knowledge is no longer sufficient in any way. You will learn a lot more if you learn to sculpt, learn the skills, the spatial sense which a sculptor needs. To understand the astral body, you will learn a lot more if you can use musical elements. You will learn an incredible amount about the way the human organism is formed, how this forming process develops out of the astral body. When human beings pass over into activity, they are actually constructed like a musical scale. In the one direction, the prime starts here at the back, changes into the second, changes into the third in the forearm. Where there are two-thirds, the human being also has two bones. And in that way you will learn quite different things from what is used today for a true understanding of the human being. And quite a different course would be required for aspiring physicians than exists today. Today's course has come about precisely because of what has come out now through Miss von Grunelius, that therapy has become nihilistic. Something nihilistic has been introduced not just by the school of Viennese physicians, but everywhere. And I have to say that among the physicians, professors, and lecturers who represent scientific subjects, there were at least serious people who were scientific because of their lack of vision. There was at least a certain seriousness. But when we get to those who lecture on pharmacology, the seriousness stops. There the lecturer himself has stopped believing in what he is lecturing about. Where the serious attitude should start in the course, where the therapeutic part starts, that is where the seriousness stops. Where is the will to heal supposed to come from? From the medical course, if it is structured similarly to the way I sketched out following the Christmas course. And that is, of course, something quite different from what happens today, because that does not lead to pharmacological skills. General practitioners generally have to acquire certain knowledge with great difficulty after they leave university. That is not always so easy, because all those things are not just useless, but often damaging. They cannot see the actual disease process because they have all kinds of things in their heads, in their memory, and cannot see the actual disease process. That is the one side. On the other hand, the other side is this. You are a group of young physicians here. Not only do you want spiritually to become proper physicians, which would of course be achieved best if you were told, quote, leave your medical studies, you will not find a medical faculty today where you can study medicine, come here and learn what you need to learn, close quote. That is what we could say quite radically. But what would the young physician do? The world would reject you, because it would not recognize you as a physician. There is no alternative for young physicians other than to go through the whole process in order then to be healed by what you can learn about medicine at the Gertianum. That you have to put yourself through the regular proper course. Even if you are reluctant to do so, there is no alternative. It is a necessity. That is the other side. But once there are quite a number of those who are familiar with such studies, and as a result know how things should not be, after all, magnetopaths and lay practitioners also complain about the universities, but that is not worth anything, they will learn from that experience, and they will be the proper pioneers, so that we can have sensible medical studies in the world. That is what you should be striving for. To try as far as possible to get the public to see what is happening. You see, basically the situation is this. As you know, you are not the only ones to say the things you have said. There are many physicians who speak like that, but those who speak like that need exactly what is offered here in addition. Why? You can, of course, criticize official medicine if you are reasonable people and become physicians, and have gone through a university course. You have gone through it and know what we do not have. But it can only become effective if there is something to put in its place. Only then will the whole thing become effective. That is the other side, of course. That is why you should not take all the things I have said here to mean that I want to stop any of the young physicians from completing their studies. As bad as it is, we still have to bite the bullet today. Things will only gradually improve if we can talk from a basis of what should not be. You see, there is still quite a lot to do in that respect. I think I have already told you this story. I was once asked to talk about medical matters to a group of physicians in Zurich, and the professor of gynecology had come along. Now I could see that he had come with the inner attitude, quote, let's hear this rubbish, so that at least we can criticize and say we were there, close quote. He really came ready for a joke to listen to this rubbish. But then he acted more and more strangely, and listened in a strange way. He found it most unpleasant that it was not rubbish, that it was not something of which he could say it was pure nonsense. I found that particularly amusing. I addressed him, quote, Professor, you had a strange impression, close quote. He responded, quote, well, you can't talk about that. It is simply a different perspective, close quote. It is indeed progress if we reach the stage where people think that it is a different perspective. What is it that has appeared alongside a scientific medicine which even so still towers above what has been achieved by lay medicine? I know that the lay practitioners have achieved important progress. But that is not relevant. A small boy found a way to automate the way the valves open and close in a steam engine because he was bored. But that does not mean he was a mechanical engineer, because he found a way to do that. The people who stand here today and complain mainly about scientific medicine are not really entitled to do so, and they refer to something of which they have no knowledge. We still have to get to the point where the anthroposophical aspect of medicine is not confused with the other things that exist. Significant progress will have been made once we have achieved a situation in which the matter is taken seriously, because the people who represent it show they take it seriously. It is something I would particularly like to entrust to you young friends, to make everything that you receive as esoteric material reach the point where you can work in the world, so that a proper will to heal really does develop. It cannot be a matter of locking yourself away egotistically in your own little world, but you must work to bring progress to medicine and so on, just as the teachers are working to bring progress to education. It is not possible for me to set out in detail how most of the things which medical courses do today are actually unnecessary for an understanding of the reciprocal relationship which exists in the healthy and sick human being. But if you study what I have offered in the various courses and cycles, you will undoubtedly find it. It is as if a child were born, and we were faced with the question as to how it was to be fed, and asked ourselves, is it possible to feed the child before having taught him or her an opinion about the different foods? That is the case with many things. I do not mean physically, but spiritually, that we have the intuition to understand the process. It is often a lot more necessary in diagnosis to go back to initial causes, which can lie in a certain period far in the past of the patient, instead of going for the common diagnosis. You see, recognizing the state of the ill or healthy organism at the moment in which the patient presents himself is what is taught today. There are methods for that. But the way of thinking, which allows us to say to the patient, you experienced this or that 50 years ago, and that is the original cause of your illness, people do not have that. They rely on what the patient tells them, and that can be unreliable. This initial cause, in particular, is the external cause which comes from the outside. A man was presented to me by a physician in Oslo. He was 60 years old. He had all kinds of rashes which were easy to diagnose, but none of the treatment helped. So the physician brought him to me. I mention one example among hundreds. And it was clear, above all, that if we were to do something, we would have to know how the whole thing started. It was not very difficult. I soon discovered that the man had gone through a severe poisoning process 30 or 35 years ago. That is what was inside him. I told him he should recall what had happened to him 35 years ago. He told me, quote, no one has yet asked me about that. I was at school. A chemical laboratory was next to our classroom, where I saw a glass with liquid. I was thirsty and drank it. I was terribly poisoned because it was hydrochloric acid, close quote. Knowing that is incredibly important. It stands out from the current situation. So it can be important to know in, let us say, some hysterical nervous states, whether the person concerned has gone through the shock of almost drowning. We have to go into these things. But we go into these things as a matter of course if we feel empathy for the person whom we want to heal. Everything medical has to start with feeling empathy for a person. If we do not feel such empathy, we will forget important things. That is what we should consider in this respect. Do all of you intend to be here tomorrow still? Then we will continue our considerations tomorrow. But I would like to give you, without going into it further now, but I will explain it tomorrow, a number of lines for further contemplation, which can become a kind of central meditation in the direction that was touched on here yesterday. In that way you will get to understand what has been built into the human being from the cosmos, from the surroundings of the earth, and by the forces of the earth, if you keep directing your attention to that. If you ask about the design of the eye, EYE, quote, how is this configured out of the cosmos, close quote, with the lung, quote, how is it configured out of the forces of the periphery, out of planetary movement, also in the elements of air and water, close quote, and, quote, how does the principle which configures metabolic organs in human beings relate to the earthly principle, close quote? If you ask these questions consistently everywhere and meditate as follows, then you will learn to see into the human being. Quote, see how things come together in the cosmos. You sense how the human being is configured, close quote. Steiner says that in connection with the moon. Again, quote, see what moves you in the air, close quote. Steiner again, for example, in the respiration or blood circulation, quote, you experience the human being ensouled, close quote. Steiner again, that is in connection with the sun. Quote, see what is transformed on the earth, close quote. Again, Steiner, especially also what brings death to human beings, quote, you grasp how the human being is filled with spirit, close quote. Steiner, that in connection with Saturn. And again, all those together, quote, see how things come together in the cosmos. You sense how the human being is configured. See what moves you in the air. You experience the human being ensouled. See what is transformed on the earth. You grasp how the human being is filled with spirit. The end of Lecture 10, translated by Christian von Arnim.